My guest at this time is Betsy McCoy, former lieutenant governor for the state of New York. She is also the author of the new book, Decoding the Obama Health Law. Many folks thought once the president was reelected earlier this month that that was it. Obamacare would be fully enshrined, and that does not seem to be entirely the case. It's obviously a bigger challenge for opponents of the law, but as we've seen in just the last couple of weeks, a growing number of states have refused to provide state-based health insurance exchanges, leaving that work up to the federal government, which clearly did not budget for such a thing. So Betsy is here to explain the significance of the states taking this step and what it means now from the federal level. And Betsy, it's always good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Most people listening probably aren't aware of what a health insurance exchange is because most Americans have never seen one. Most people currently get their health insurance on a job, either their own or their spouse's, or they go to an insurance broker if they have to buy it directly. But the law envisions a third way called a health insurance exchange, which is basically a DMV-type office plus an 800 number and a government website. And the law proposed that states voluntarily set up these health insurance exchanges. Why do I say voluntarily? Because it's actually contrary to the Constitution for the federal government to require states to set them up. So the law had to give states the leeway to decide whether to set them up, but the expectation was that they would. And now the Obama administration is surprised to learn that many states refuse to set them up. They don't want to go through the expense. And moreover, the Obama health law remains unpopular, even though the author of it, the president, has been reelected.
So does it mean anything different for folks? Ultimately, it'll probably change on how the federal government sets this up compared to various states. But when it comes to freedoms or options of individual patients across the country, will it make a huge difference where this exchange is coming from?
Oh, it's going to make a very big difference, and here's why. Because the law says that if you go to a state health insurance exchange to buy your health insurance, you are entitled, and I use that word because that's exactly what I mean, entitled to a tax credit. In other words, taxpayer help paying for your health insurance. If your household earns up to $92,300, you're entitled to that help. And that means that the full cost of that health plan won't be on you. But the law only allows you to get that tax credit if you're at a state health insurance exchange. So in the many states that are refusing to set up those exchanges, people are going to be required to buy health insurance, but they may not be able to get any help paying for it. And those health plans are going to be very expensive. Even the federal government anticipates that the premium is going to go up 7% next year, maybe $14,000 or $15,000 for a family plan. It's a lot of money. And when you look at the number of states that have already announced that they're going to refuse to set up these exchanges, I'm talking about Maine, Ohio, Louisiana, Wisconsin, big states with large populations, and it hasn't been resolved exactly what's going to happen, whether those people will be required to enroll in what's called the qualified plan, even though they can't get a subsidy. We'll have to see.
So do you expect this to delay implementation?
I do. And the fact is that implementation predictably will be delayed because the federal government undoubtedly won't be able to set up federal exchanges in all those states by next October when the exchanges are supposed to be up and running.
And the big avenue, of course, from the president's health care bill to expand coverage, as it claims to, I guess, about 30 million additional Americans than currently have access to it, is largely through the expansion of Medicaid. And some of these same states that have refused to set up their own state-based health insurance exchanges have also refused to participate in any sort of state expansion of Medicaid. What's the impact of
that?
Well,
and the impact there, once again, is very large. Texas is a good example. If Texas had gone along with the Medicaid expansion, it would have meant a 57% increase in Medicaid enrollment in Texas. You know, when the president said he was going to solve the problem of the uninsured by making health insurance more affordable, that's not really what the law does. Instead, it enrolls many, many people in the public program called Medicaid. But that's a program where the cost traditionally has been split between the state governments and the federal government. Well, the federal government says we're going to pay for the entire cost of expanding this enrollment. But states are worried you know, the federal government can change its mind, break its promise any time. And since when haven't politicians broken their promises? So the states are very reluctant to enroll a lot of new people in Medicaid and then get socked with the bill when the federal government reneges on its promise to pay the full cost.
What about the problem of physicians already, even before these changes to the law happening, essentially denying most Medicaid patients because of the reimbursement rate? So if that's expanded,
right.
Then what happens?
Doctors are paid so little to take care of a Medicaid patient that it's very hard for people on Medicaid to find doctors. And the result is that it's kind of broken promise medicine. In other words, there are quite a few studies that show that a patient on Medicaid who has surgery, has a substantially higher risk of dying during that surgery than someone who has private health insurance, and in fact a worse risk of dying even than someone who has no insurance at all.
Betsy, back during the debate in 2009-2010, we got this endless parade of estimates on cost from the Congressional Budget Office, and ultimately the administration claimed that over the first 10 years the cost would be less than $1 trillion, and obviously Republicans said that was fuzzy math because there's only 6 years of expenses, 10 years of revenues, and all sorts of things like that. But if, in fact, the states don't end up running these exchanges, as it looks like many of them won't, and there's not going to be any state assistance in expanding Medicaid, what's the bill for the taxpayer on the federal level?
Well, it goes up and up and up. And as you can see from the Congressional Budget Office revised projections, they're revising them all the time. They came out with new projections last July. And once again, of course, the costs were higher, particularly for the health exchanges.
Betsy, I know one of the things that you've been focused on greatly as this all unfolds is the impact on the elderly in this country. Explain what all this implementation will mean for them.
One thing is clear. Seniors pay for over half of this health law. Cuts to Medicare pay for over half the Obama health law. And now members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are actually talking about further cuts to Medicare. They call them entitlement reforms. But what they're really doing is just reducing the amount of money that hospitals and doctors and dialysis centers and hospice care are paid to care for seniors. Well, they are already pushing those payments down so low that nurses are striking all over the country and hospitals are forced to lay off nurses. And the result is poor patient care. When you spread those nurses thinner, patients have to wait longer. And we know from past experience that the mortality rate, the death rate from heart attacks in the hospital, for example, goes up. Elderly patients particularly have a harder time surviving their hospital stay and going home again when the government cuts Medicare.
And now you have some who are obviously hoping for a different Supreme Court verdict last year on the individual mandate and so forth, and others who thought that changes might come through specific election results, which did not come. There are now folks who see what these states are doing with these refusing the exchanges and so forth, and they're saying this is the way now that this law will die. Is that looking at this through rose-colored glasses, or do you believe that that's actually a path to making this not a reality in 2 years?
Well, certainly all of these legal pressures, it's a full employment bill for lawyers over the next few years. But in addition, the delays caused by the exchanges and by refusing to expand Medicaid, combined with the enormous pressure on Congress now as the fiscal cliff approaches, may force the administration to make some changes.
Last question. Just earlier this week, we saw the Supreme Court order the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals to rehear a case filed by Liberty University based on the employer mandate, challenging that, as well as the contention that some of the provisions within the Obama health law violate First Amendment religious freedom provisions as well, and that those would be unconstitutional. Are you optimistic about that case, or is that likely to end up like the first one?
Well, it's certainly hard to predict, although I would say that Liberty has a good case. But the bigger issue here also, beyond religious liberty, which is, of course, close to my heart, is the employer mandate. Very few people realize yet how at risk their own health insurance is, but at least a third of employers are going to stop providing that on-the-job coverage. So millions and millions of Americans sometime this year are going to get bad news that they no longer have on-the-job coverage, and they're going to have to go to one of these health insurance exchanges or be dumped onto Medicaid, and that is bad news.
Betsy, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Betsy McCoy is a former lieutenant governor for the state of New York. Her new book, Decoding the Obama Health Law. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.